This is Jonathan Armstrong. I'm speaking to you as part of our Tech Law 10 series of 10-minute technology law broadcasts. I'm speaking to you live from a wedding-obsessed UK. And Eric, you're somewhere sunnier.
I'm in sunny San Francisco. It is sunny. It is not foggy. And we're wedding-obsessed here, too. So the royals are contagious.
That's good to hear. And hopefully you're strengthening the British pound even as we speak with your purchasing of wedding tea towels and memorabilia. This week, as well as being obsessed with weddings then, Eric, you've been obsessed with online dating as well. I'm guessing there's a bit of a theme here.
Well, I haven't been obsessed with online dating for myself personally. I've been married for quite a while. But, you know, the question does arise for various folks as to whether they can find the love of their life on the internet through dating sites, and can they do that in such a way that they don't come upon any threats to their own personal safety or any potential for physical danger. And this came up with respect to recent developments involving the large dating site Match.com. As a result, Match.com has stated publicly that it now will screen for sex offenders listed on the National Sex Offender Registry. Say that one five times fast. And this all came about in the wake of a recent California lawsuit that was filed against the dating site by a woman who alleges that she was raped by a convicted offender whom she met on Match.com. And she argues that if the site had properly vetted its potential members and excluded members who presented a risk, this never would have happened to her. The response has been that the lawyer representing the man accused of raping the woman has characterized their entanglement as a consensual sexual encounter. Obviously, she does not see it that way. And the lawsuit purports not only to be on behalf of the woman who claims that she was raped, but also for all Match.com for-pay female members from August 2010 to the present time, arguing that, you know, there's a sufficient basis for a class action that all of the female members during this time frame are under potential risk and threat by Match.com allegedly not having properly screened its members. The attorney for
why did they pick that day? Do we know that?
Why did they pick August 10, 2010? I don't know the answer to that question. Good question. I don't know. They're seeking, in addition to other remedies, they're seeking an injunction, actually seeking to prohibit Match.com from adding further members to its site until adequate screening procedures are put in place. So Match.com, like I said, has now agreed to screen sex offenders, but the Match.com representatives, you know, urge the public that even with screening procedures in place, that they're not flawless, and it behooves everyone to exercise due care, caution, and prudence when they're meeting strangers. And in fact, the Match.com, you know, terms of service have stated throughout this time period that, you know, members are responsible for their interactions with others, and Match.com is not liable for the consequences of meetings that happen. You know, you can see both sides of the argument here. I mean, on the one hand, to the extent a dating site can reasonably and efficiently put in place some screening mechanisms that help, that might filter out some bad elements, that's a good thing. I think we would understand that that can't be perfect. And frankly, maybe somebody that doesn't even have a record still might be somebody that could act up and do some bad things. So the other point is this, that even if, let's just say, Match.com has now has these screening procedures, and you meet somebody on the website, you'd still be smart to be careful when you actually physically get together with them. And if you do that at all, and if you're not even sure about the person, perhaps you don't meet. If you do meet, you do so in a public, safe place. Maybe bring along a friend who happens to be 6'5" and 250 pounds of muscle to protect you. And perhaps if people are really concerned, they can try to conduct their own investigation with respect to the person they're about to meet. I throw it back to you, Jonathan. What are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, in the interest of full disclosure, I've done work for online dating sites in the past. And I mean, my gut reaction is the class action sounds a bit mad to me. We have a saying, I don't know whether you have the same saying over there, of nanny state, and it always it just sounds a bit like nanny state to me. You know, if I go onto an online dating site, do I really expect people to have been verified? If it's somewhere like Match.com, of course there are other services available where the people I'm going to meet have been vetted, and you know, there are old-fashioned introduction agencies where the agency has met both people, think they're compatible, you know, presumably has done some sort of a vetting, and charges a decent fee for that. But that's not the Match.com model. The Match.com model is that you have, you know, let's not be too uncaring about it, but it's slightly like eBay, isn't it? It works on volume. There's an awful lot of goods out there. You take a look at the individual profiles, you take a look at their photograph, you pick what you like, and you arrange a rendezvous. It seems to me that it's stretching it a little to say that Match.com should, you know, verify the bona fides of everybody on the site, just as it's stretching things to say that, you know, if I'm going to buy a bicycle off eBay, then the guy from eBay has to go around and ride it around the streets a couple of times first to check it's safe.
I think it's a very good analogy because, you know, eBay essentially is a meeting place or a marketplace in cyberspace where people can get together to buy and sell things. And in the bicycle analogy, you're right. You know, it's not for eBay to really check it out. And what if somebody purposely, you know, loosens the screws that hold the wheels on, and then you're going down a steep hill the first time you ride it, and you get hurt, right? By the same token, Match.com or eHarmony or others, these are meeting places in cyberspace where would-be daters can check out who they might want to see or not, and they need to be careful. And I think it's fairly well known that there's a propensity for exaggeration on these websites. People can exaggerate their, you know, they can even, you know, pick the best picture of themselves from 15 years ago and say they have degrees.
People really do that, Eric?
Yeah, actually, I need to update mine.
It's not just on the Dwayne Morris biogs that people pick old photographs.
Right, exactly. So that photos might not be recent. They could even be of somebody else. Incomes can be overstated. You know, job background could be inflated. You know, interests could be set forth as more varied and interesting than they really are. All with the idea of, you know, getting together with somebody and hopefully then hooking them. But other things can happen too. And so the real point is everybody needs to go into this with eyes open, recognizing that you really are potentially meeting a stranger and all that comes with it.
I think just very quickly, because we're about to wrap up, the other real issue I see for online dating sites, if they are going to do that or feel compelled to do that, is bear in mind the fact that in many cases it would not be possible to do that vetting in Europe. We have fairly strict data privacy laws, which we've talked about on these podcasts before. We also have legislation that enables people who have been convicted of a criminal offense to be rehabilitated after a certain period of time. So you couldn't necessarily assume that you could do vetting in some European countries. The fact that they've been convicted or suspected of an offense is probably something that you would have to obtain their consent to share. And even if you were to say, you know, you're not going to be permitted onto this site, that would be very difficult for a website operator to run and to police, and it would be difficult for them to obtain that data. So maybe this is another way in which the internet doesn't work across borders that well. If the US courts are going to impose such a requirement, that may narrow the market. And that in itself is probably not healthy for an online dating service that, again, works by the numbers game. The more potential matches are there, the more likely you are to find your ideal partner, just as William and Kate found each other all of those years ago.
Well, anyway, one thing to point out is, as we wrap up, is that, you know, there hasn't been a court ruling in the case. It's simply a complaint, and Match.com has voluntarily, you know, agreed to do this baseline screening, if you will, but it's very clear that it's not perfect and it's not a guarantee. And I will add that one of my daughter's girlfriend's mother met the love of her life, I believe, on Match.com, and they've been happily married for a while now. So this is Eric Sinrod in San Francisco for Duane Morse, and I've been joined by Jonathan Armstrong in our London office. We thank you for joining us for this weekly Tech Law 10. My email address is ejsinrod@duanemorse.com. Jonathan will provide his in a moment, and you can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Jonathan, go ahead.
I'm JP Armstrong at duanemorse.com. And one thing that maybe I should say is that if you're currently listening to these podcasts online, but iTunes is easier for you, you can now download these podcasts for free on iTunes as well. You can share these podcasts. We'd be grateful if you'd like to with your friends, family, people you meet on Match.com. And the link to find them on iTunes is www.bit.ly/techlaw10i. The main website is www.bit.ly/techlaw10. And please do keep your suggestions for topics coming in, and we look forward to speaking to you next time. Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.